city lights looking fine, and I know this is my time now. I'm gonna be myself, or I could be someone else. No one's stopping me now. I'm gonna skip my breaks, I'm gonna make mistakes. I just wanna feel alive. It's just what I do when I'm out, so try not to hold me down. Feel alive when I'm in this town.
Hey, this is Champaign, Illinois native Emily Harrington coming to you from Kitchen Table Studios in the ever-evolving, sometimes boring, flatlands of Champaign-Urbana for the next podcast episode of Hyperlocals, where townies and transplants share their tales of tears and triumphs, losses and wins. So stay tuned to catch the characters behind the beloved Twin Cities of CU. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the next episode of the Hyper Locals podcast. Little disclaimer here, I have lost my moneymaker, so to speak. So bear with me here, but I think I'm getting better. Emily Donahoe is across Kitchen Table Studios from me. Hi, Emily. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I have learned a lot about her that I did not know just in the pre-interview. So I'm very excited for this interview. She told me she's a Florida girl, which I am. You're a brunette. You have dark eyes. And we were talking how East Coast you look. You get Greek, you get Italian, you get New Yorker.
Yes. I think the New Yorker is more my attitude.
Yes. I would never have put you in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yep. Born and raised.
Born and raised.
Fourth generation. Super random. I mean, there are not a lot of native Jacksonvillians.
Is your family still there?
Yep.
Wow. So do you go to Florida a lot?
Not a ton. I mean, we fly through Florida.
Yes. You wave down you're passing over. Okay.
That's right.
You have another big vacation spot we'll get to. So you probably don't have a lot of time to go to Florida.
True.
Yes. Now, Emily is a professional photographer, a CPA turned professional photographer.
Recovering CPA is what I like to call it.
Recovering, yes. During tax season, you're probably like, oh my God, I'm so glad I don't have to do that anymore.
Yes.
Although you have your busy season, which you said was fall and Christmas in the photography world.
Oh, yeah.
In our area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so tell me your childhood in Florida. When do you transition out of Florida? What brings you to the Midwest?
Well, my husband got his PhD at Florida. Well, we were both CPAs in public practice, and neither of us liked it. So it was like, how do we get out of this?
Yes.
So my husband, super scholarly, is an excellent teacher. I know because he was my teacher.
No.
Scandalous. I know. I didn't drop that bomb on you till right now.
I didn't think he was that much older than you.
He's not. I had already graduated. I was working. He was working. He was just an adjunct professor, and I needed extra hours to sit for the CPA exam.
Shut up. Okay, what college did you go to?
I went to University of North Florida.
Okay, and he was a professor?
Oh, yeah, he was an adjunct professor there.
Okay.
So he worked at PwC, and at night he had a couple classes that he taught. And I went to UNF, but I had graduated. I was working in a CPA firm, and I needed extra hours to sit for the last section of my exam. I had already passed three sections, but Florida had a 150-hour requirement, and not every state did at the time.
Oh my gosh.
So I had passed those three in Virginia, but was working in Florida and needed the last one. So
okay.
It was corporate tax. I mean, I went with a girl that I worked with, and we were in class one night, and I looked at her, and I said, he's going to be the father of my kids.
Shut
and she goes,
up.
What? I was like, yeah. And guess what? He is.
Because you felt a chemistry with him, or you just liked how he taught?
I don't know what it was.
That is wild.
He made me laugh.
Okay.
Honestly, that he is the funniest guy. He's so introverted and so quiet. And
yeah.
If you met him, you would be like, are you sure?
Yes.
But yeah. He is hilarious, and he stole my heart that way. And so we didn't start dating until after the class was over. He jokingly says it was the best documented A he ever gave. but he's not wrong. I mean, I earned it. I was a straight A student. And so we started dating after, and we dated for 3 years and got married. And so we were both in public accounting. And
so let's just back up.
Sorry.
Okay. So you're his student. He is your teacher. Mm-hmm. And it's strictly professional.
Yeah.
Was there eyes made, flirtation, chemistry in that class?
I went after him.
Okay.
I know that shocks you.
Okay. So you were staying after hours, so to speak.
You know, his phone number was on the syllabus and I might have called for some help.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So you really pursued.
I did. I went after him.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And then when you're officially graduated out of his class, the dating begins.
Yes.
Okay. He gives you an A in the class.
I earned an A in the class.
Okay, but how did you earn it, Emily? That's the real question.
No. I was a great student. Everything on that was up and up. I swear it.
Okay, so now you become a certified professional accountant.
Yep.
Okay. Why that profession? Because you have so much personality and color, and that is such a black and white.
It is. My favorite compliment ever was, wow, you don't seem like a CPA, like when I was actually in public practice. I was good at math. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And when I started school, I took an accounting like 101 and I did really well. And it came pretty easily to me. Mm. And I saw other people struggling. And I just kind of, then I took the next one and then I took the next one. And then it was like, okay, I guess this is the path.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I hated it once I got into public practice. Within 6 months, I told my manager, I was like, I don't.
Within 6 months of your professional career, mm-hmm. What did you hate about it?
I wasn't passionate about it.
Okay.
And
but you were good at it and it came easy.
To a certain degree, yes. Like the numbers, yes. But like researching stuff about it, like, you know, when there were specific issues or, you know, things that were really nuanced, didn't like it. I wasn't fast. Like I was good, but I was not fast. And that is a billable hour industry.
Oh man.
So I would get frustrated because I couldn't advance like I wanted to, like I thought I wanted to.
Sure.
But I also knew I never wanted to be a partner. I made the mistake of saying that in a job interview.
Oh no.
Yeah. They actually hired me anyway, but they were like, yeah, that probably wasn't the best answer. And I'm like, but I don't want to lie.
Yeah. And your husband also is a CPA. Now, is he still a CPA today?
Yep.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
I still am. I am inactive, but I still have all of my, like, I'm still certified.
Wow. So if photography doesn't work out, you could always go back.
I would never go back. Never.
Okay. What if you were destitute? Would you go back then?
I would never be as doing what I do, and I don't mean this the wrong way, but doing it like I do, I will never be destitute with photography.
Okay.
But it gave me an incredible foundation.
Sure. Business foundation, numbers foundation, money foundation.
All of it. Because a lot of creatives don't have that side of their brain.
Yes. And you have both working.
So, you know, people, I'm definitely on the high end of things and people look at me and they're like, how can you do this? How can you do that and charge this? And I'm like, well, I know I'm good enough to charge it, number one. Mm. But number two, I know what my costs are. I know what my profit margins need to be.
Sure.
I am priced mathematically.
Yeah.
For what keeps me in business.
Oh, that makes so much sense. And you are, I believe, I've experienced many photographers, but everything you do is with such detail and care.
We're all about the experience.
Yes. Yeah. It's literally in a pretty package. So, okay. So 6 months, do you quit after 6 months or no. do you hang in?
Oh God. No, I was in for, let's see, like 8 years, 9 years.
Did you try different firms?
Mm-hmm.
And so you were trying to find something that would click.
Yep. Even my manager said, don't judge the whole profession based on this place.
Mm.
Because she was much older than me and had been multiple places in her past. And she was just like, don't throw in the towel yet.
So she knew you were struggling with this. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, I told her.
Oh, you were really honest with her.
Yeah. And so I left that firm eventually and went to another firm.
It's interesting that she wanted to hold on to you, mm-hmm. even after you explained, I'm not happy here.
Well, and actually that came up again when I was in Gainesville, which was when Michael had gone to get his PhD. I had transitioned firms and I know we're going to get to this later, but I had had Nicholas and was struggling. Michael still had another year to go.
Okay.
And I was like, I can't do this.
Mm.
I am suffering too much and I hate what I do. And I told this to the tax partner. And we had a basically all, it was a female heavy tax department. And
interesting.
She looked at me and she goes, nope. I don't care what we have to do. We're going to get you through this year until you're done.
Wow.
And there were days they literally had to physically hold me up because really? I was suffering pretty bad. She's like, nope, we're going to get you through this until wow. he's done and you guys are ready to move.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. Oh, maybe only a female perspective would say mm-hmm. that, a female maybe. Boss, you know?
Yeah, she was great.
Okay, so you lasted how long and how many firms?
I went to that two regional firms uh-huh. and then I went into the corporate world. I thought maybe, all right, let me get out of public and let me go corporate. That was not the right move.
Meaning you did the taxes for one specific corporation.
I was on the, I was in the accounting department uh-huh. of a very large company.
Got it.
And the thing was, it became mind numbingly boring.
Because now it's the same thing.
Well, and you were only busy 1 week a month. Oh, jeez. And your computer was locked down. Like, internet stuff was locked down. You couldn't go to the bathroom without red tape permission. And in public accounting, you kind of come and go as you please.
Sure.
Like, nobody cares what 80 hours you work. You can do whatever. You can take a two-hour lunch. You can go to the doctor. And so with the corporate world, that was not happening. So then Michael had left PwC at that point and was working for another regional firm. And he was getting ready. We were getting married. And we knew he was going to go back and get his PhD, which was going to put him in Gainesville. So we were living in Jacksonville, about 90 miles from Gainesville.
Okay.
So we were going to be living in Gainesville. So I left that corporate job and went and took his place at his firm.
Wow.
So we had a 6 month period of transition between him handing his clients over to me. So they closed the firm for our wedding. I mean, they were like, our tax department's getting married.
That is so funny.
So then I commuted and I spent, during tax season at least, I would spend 3 nights in Jacksonville and mm-hmm. the rest of the time in Gainesville. Mm. But I would drive in at 4 in the morning. I would get to work by 6 or 6:30, work until midnight or 1 or 2. Mm-mm. I would go to a friend's house and basically shower, take a nap, and then go back and do it again. I did that for 2 days, and then I would drive home.
Wow.
On Thursday. And then I would work the rest of the week from home. But it got to be too much. I was falling asleep behind the wheel. I was like, I'm going to die. Oh my God. So then I was like, I need to find a job in Gainesville. So that was when I found it's a firm called James Moore and Company. And that was where the whole female tax department was.
Okay.
It was amazing.
So at this time is when you have your son?
We had him. I was at James Moore, I think about 3 years.
Jeez.
Because Michael's program was a 5-year program. Okay. And we agreed I would stay in public while he got his degree. And then I was out.
Okay.
So we had Nicholas at about the 3.5 year mark.
Okay. So you're married in Florida. Mm-hmm. Okay. Big wedding. A lot of accountants, I bet.
There were. Well, the owner of the firm that we both worked for was one of our readers.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So how long are you married until your son is born?
Let's see. We got married in 06 and he was born in October of 10. So 4.5 years.
Okay. Was this a big conversation when you decided to have children? Was it a natural transition? You always knew you wanted to be a mom?
Always knew I wanted to be a mom.
Really?
And he knew he wanted to be a dad, uh-huh. but he also wanted to be almost done with his program. I got to get through comps.
Sure.
So as soon as he got through comps, we started trying to get pregnant and struggled a little.
What's comps?
Comprehensives. Okay. It's the comprehensive exam. So after the...
The bar of being a CPA?
Kind of, yes.
Okay.
So there's that and the dissertation. Those are the two things that you have to... The two huge hurdles of a PhD program you have to overcome.
Okay.
So comps happen in the 4th year. And then the 5th year is on the job market.
Okay. Okay, so you struggled a little bit, but without intervention, you were able to have it.
We were headed. We had one of those cases that we had called, made the appointment, and then a week before the appointment, I had to call and be like, okay, so I need to cancel or change the type of appointment because we're pregnant.
Wow. So you just saved yourself a boatload of money.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes.
You got it for free. Okay, so tell me about being pregnant and when you had children, how that felt.
Pregnancy was good. I was nauseous in the first trimester and exhausted, but otherwise, the worst thing that I struggled with was my back.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I had big sciatica issues and
that was the worst.
It was so bad.
I had that with my second and it was debilitating.
Mm-hmm. It's awful. Yeah. It was brutal. Sometimes were worse than others, but there would be days that I felt like I could barely walk. Jeez. Like I would be like dragging my feet through the office. And so I wanted him to come. That last month I was like, oh dear God, please, please come.
I'm not going to make it.
Right.
Yeah.
And he listened. He came just early enough that it wasn't problematic. We had his dresser delivered on a Friday, Saturday, when it was like 2.5 weeks before I was due. Saturday I went, I was like, I should get an oil change because, you know, this is going to happen.
Get it all done. Yeah,
get
right?
it all done. And I walked the mall because it was at Sears that I dropped it off for 3 hours because they were like, we're on a wait. And I'm like, whatever, I'll just walk around. So I went home after the oil change and I'm sitting in his floor and I'm folding all these clothes to put into the new dresser. And my husband, we had like a Jack and Jill bedroom thing.
Yes.
And I said, I think it's time. And he goes, why you think that? And I was in the bathroom and I said, you hear that? And he goes, yeah. I said, I'm not actually peeing.
Oh my God.
So he was like, okay. And then we had done like the Lamaze classes and all the stuff. The bag was packed and I was like, hang on, I need to eat. Because
yes.
they told me, like, once we get there, no food. So we went, it was like 6 o'clock. I think it was Saturday night. And even though my water broke on its own, my doctor was actually on call. She was coming on call that night. And she goes, well, if you want to deliver him with me and it's your first one, I think we should probably induce too.
Wow. Okay.
I was like, all right. So they put the Pitocin in. It was the Florida Alabama game was on. like I remember all these things. And 12 hours later he came, but it was I pushed for 3 hours.
Did you decide to do it? You did Lamaze. So were you trying for a natural birth? Okay.
Nope. I was like, give me the epidural.
Did any of your Lamaze training come into play? Or did it go out the window? Yeah, I know. I brought candles. I mean, we were
the whole thing, the music. Yeah,
stupid.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so he comes in 3 hours of pushing. It's a long ass time.
It was a long ass time. His head was turned sideways, so he was stuck in the birth canal. And I remember my labor and delivery nurse. I will never forget her. Her name is Amy, and she would stand by the bed. And when she was trying to count me through, she would go, you know, 6, 7, 8, and then she would go 9, 10. And after about 5 or 6 times of that, I looked at her and I go, if you effing want me to count to 15, then count to 15. I'm like, stop holding that 9.
You couldn't take it anymore.
I couldn't take it anymore. And then I spiked a fever and all this.
Oh,
and
so no.
Then they put me on oxygen and all these people start coming in the room and I'm like, oh God, here we go. And they were like, all right, we're going to give it a couple more tries. And if not, like, we're headed for C-section.
Shoot.
And my doctor was like, okay, if I make a small cut, I think we can get him. And I'm like, do whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
And she did. And in like a nanosecond, he was out. And I looked at her and I go, why didn't you do that an hour and a half ago? And she just kind of laughed. And but because of the fever, they had to put him on antibiotics immediately. We got an extra day in the hospital. And you know how babies come out, sometimes they have like that cone
sure
head.
Sure.
Well, because his head was turned this way, it was to the side. And I never saw it, but Michael did, and he said that the cardiac guy, I mean, by this point we've got the cardiac pediatric guy in the room, there's like a whole freaking army
sure.
in the room, and I did not care at all. And he put a hat on him really, really fast. And he looked at Michael and he goes, don't say a word. It'll be fine in 6 hours. Uh-oh. He goes, she'll never see it. And I didn't.
Oh my gosh. So you found that out after the fact.
After the fact, yeah.
Because that would be alarming.
Yeah. Michael said it alarmed him, but
oh my God.
He did not show it.
Oh my gosh. That is so funny. And the new mommy, had you put the CPA, had you quit officially at this point?
No, I was just on maternity leave.
Okay. So you're planning on going back?
Yep.
Okay.
Because Michael was still in school, so I wasn't done.
How much did he have left?
We were in the final year.
Okay.
So Nicholas was born in October. Michael went on the market in January, right when tax season started.
Oh, okay.
And then we moved the following May.
Okay. 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 So you have about 8 months to go of this time.
Yeah.
Okay. And how were those 8 months? He's in his PhD finishing in the market.
Yep.
You're now a new mom on maternity leave. Mm-hmm. There's a job waiting for you that you hate to go back to.
Yep. Yep. I loved the people that, which made it amazing.
Sure.
And that I always said, if I can't make it work here, like if I'm not happy in this firm, I will never be happy in this, because the people, the work ethic, the expectations were very realistic. They wouldn't let us work past like 10 o'clock.
Okay. So this solidified that it's not the place.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
It's like, I'm out.
Yes.
After Nicholas was about 3 weeks old, and, I've struggled with anxiety and depression through my life, and I was okay during my pregnancy. And then at about the 3 week mark, I woke up and I was like, I need help.
Ooh.
I mean, it was like a light switch. I knew myself well enough to know I was in trouble.
Really?
Yeah.
So it had been fine. Like, I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm a new mom.
Mm-hmm.
But 3 weeks you felt
it was like someone had a dark cloud. A light switch. Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Good for you for being self-actualized enough to know you needed help.
Yeah. I was like, okay. And Michael's never suffered with anxiety, depression, anything. And I know that a lot of people that don't have the vantage point of what it feels like. And it can be maybe not the most supportive.
Uh-huh.
And he was incredible. For someone who's never experienced it, he was like, okay. He was like, tell me what we need to do.
Was he like the first person that you told mm-hmm. something's wrong?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what do you do to get help?
I started looking for psychiatrists, psychologists. I went to like my GYN
sure,
or my OB.
Sure.
Because that was like, we had to fill out those forms,
yes,
you know, when you go back.
The screenings.
Yes. How you feeling every time you went back, and like the crying started, and I was dark thoughts, and I always said it was like a freight train.
Jeez.
That would not stop racing through my head. You know those movie screens, like old school, that have all the black and white stuff that flashes, and sometimes you see them where there's like dark stuff in them.
Yeah,
that's what was in my head all the time.
How did you care for Nicholas when you're feeling this way, and Michael's presumably out of the house having to go to work?
We told our parents.
Ugh.
And fortunately we lived in Florida at the time.
Sure.
And Michael's parents were in Ocala and my mom was in Jacksonville. Both are about an hour and a half from Gainesville. Gainesville's kind of the midpoint. So for all the weeks that he was on the job market, he was away for 10 weeks, like 4 days a week for 10 weeks.
Damn.
And I was terrified to be alone.
Oh my God.
With myself.
Yeah.
With my baby, with everything. So our moms took turns.
Really?
And every other week, one would come and just be in the house with me, help feed him, help me function, help me get out the door, help me get out of the closet floor. I mean, it was bad. It was real bad.
Are you the kind of person that can ask for help, or is that hard?
It depends on what the situation is.
That, yeah.
I had no problem asking for help
because
I knew I was out of my depths.
Mm.
And I knew it immediately. I was like, this isn't normal.
Jeez.
And so like, if it's something that I know I can do, I have a hard time asking for help. But
sure,
for this, I knew I wasn't going to navigate this solo. I needed help.
Jeez.
And so we got it.
Did you medicate yourself to? Yeah.
Because we had the support system we had,
yeah,
between the moms,
sure,
and Michael. I mean, and my father-in-law was amazing. Like, that is what kept me out of the hospital. There are levels, I came to find out, of postpartum, and there's like postpartum, there's baby blues, postpartum mm-hmm. depression, there's postpartum OCD, and then there's postpartum psychosis. Psychosis is where you're hospitalized. I was firmly in the OCD category.
Really?
It was bad. I was terrified. I cried all the time. I couldn't eat. I lost like 30 pounds. Not trying. I had a hard time swallowing food.
Jesus.
So that's why I was like, I know I need help. And so I found a therapist. I went through a couple of psychiatrists and found one that was good. And they put me on a cocktail of meds that, like, it numbed me. I became
zombie-ish.
A zombie. The day I knew I was too dead inside was Sandy Hook.
Oh.
because I knew logically, realistically, like what a terrible tragedy it was. And I felt nothing. Like I couldn't feel, and I wanted to, I'm like, this, there's something wrong with me.
Mm.
And so after that, we started trying to get off of some of the drugs I was on, but even getting off was awful.
So Sandy Hook, just for anyone mm-hmm. who may not know, was a terrible school shooting. And now you're a new mom mm-hmm. and to a new mom with a baby, that's going to hit harder, right? Yeah. And that was Florida. Is that right?
That was in Florida.
Okay. Yeah. So you also have that component of regional connection. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how far are we into newborndom that Sandy Hook happens? And you're like, oh, I got to change something up. Like, how long has this lasted, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I mean, all told, it was about 4 years.
4 years?
It was the hardest 4 years of my life. It was awful.
Before that, you had anxiety and depression, but not debilitating. Is that?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Like, I was on, you know, Lexapro or whatever I was on, and I was on a normal dose okay. and functioning fine.
Sure.
Like, that was all fine. This was next level.
Did you fear postpartum when you're pregnant, or that did that come up?
Yeah, because I had dealt with it long since I was 20. That was when I got diagnosed with the whatever anxiety and
okay.
depression.
Whatever the normal,
whatever it is,
the normal,
whatever the normal thing is. And so I was, let's see, I was 34 when Nicholas was born.
Okay,
and so, I mean, I'd had 14 years under my belt. I knew. And I had tried to come off of meds in the past and couldn't.
Oh,
it didn't
gosh.
Work. I was like, you know what? This is no different than diabetes or any other thing that you got to take meds for. And so I've always had a very healthy, like, respect for them. It wouldn't be the freaking trillion-dollar industry that it is
uh-huh.
if people yes. weren't suffering and in need of those things. So I never had a hang up about taking meds.
Okay.
I just didn't really want to be on meds if I didn't have to. And I was like, oh, let me try to get off. Well, that ship has sailed. So while I was pregnant, I was concerned. And I talked to my doctor in uh-huh. advance. I'm like, I know there are some drugs that are considered safe mm-hmm. or safer than others, whatever. And she and I decided that it would be potentially more detrimental for the baby that I was carrying, for me to experience the levels of
yes.
distress.
The risk versus reward, yes.
Right. So I think it was Prozac. It's whatever the Zoloft, I don't know. Okay. I don't remember what it was, but it's whatever the one that was tested that you could take while you were pregnant, and there was nothing shown to affect the baby. That's what they put me on.
Okay.
And okay. so I was fine through my pregnancy.
Okay.
While I maintained that, everything was fine. And then as soon as I had him, I went back on my regular stuff.
Okay. Okay. There are a lot of people, me included, I think that would ignore the symptoms and just try to like deal with it myself. But for you to say, raise your hand and say, I need help. Someone come in here. I have a problem. I think is just very noble. Mm.
I was trying to find a way to survive. I don't know if nobility is it. I didn't think I was going to survive that.
Really?
I mean, I can remember posting the Serenity Prayer on my mirror. I would look for anything to get me through 1 minute of the day to give me any hope. Like when I would go to different, you know, to my doctor or whatever, you could tell if someone had experienced it. Like I could see it in their eyes. If they really knew what I meant, I could tell if they had been there. And people that I met that I could tell had been there gave me hope that I would survive it.
So you could not hide it.
Oh, there was no hiding it. There was no hiding it.
So breastfeeding, diapering, feeding, could you do that?
Yep. I was able to do it all. And I did breastfeed, but when I went back to work, I was so stressed by all of it and everything that like I would pump 3 or 4 times a day and get 2 ounces total, which then I put more stress on myself.
Oh, 100%.
You know, it was such a bad cycle, and I really wanted to go a year. But bless my sweet child's heart, at 10 months, he quit overnight.
Oh,
he quit.
Yeah.
He quit his pacifier and he quit me overnight. And as much as I wanted to go to a year, it was like he clearly was fine.
Mm. Okay. Going back to work, mm-hmm. under these conditions, did you get 3 months maternity leave?
Yep. So I went back in mid-January, right into tax season.
Had you stabilized at all?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No.
Okay. So your in-laws, your mom, they're taking turns while you're at work. Mm-hmm. Okay. So for 4 years, you suffered.
Mm-hmm. To varying degrees. Yeah. I mean, it was not always... You know, I went through the period where I was on all the meds and
yes,
was a shell of the person that I used to be. And then I got off of one of the meds and bless my husband's heart. I'm a person who doesn't do well with power of suggestion. So he always did the research on my drugs so that he knew what to keep an eye out for and what was normal and what wasn't as far as side effects go and my behavior.
Sure.
But I didn't want to know what I could expect or what, you know, I just didn't want to know.
Yeah.
And so for when I got off of this one med, he had created this table of like the half-life step down of how much was in my system and at what point, you know, for how many weeks and whatever. But coming off of it, I felt like I was being electrocuted in my spine. I couldn't sleep. This is the only time in my life I've really had insomnia. I felt like someone, this was how I used to describe it. And I remember the feeling like it was yesterday, but not that I've ever had anyone do this, but in my head, it was the feeling I would expect to feel if someone was dragging a dental, like one of the hook scrapers mm-hmm. across the mm-hmm. base mm-hmm. of my spine, mm-hmm. the nerves mm-hmm. in the base mm-hmm. of my spine. Mm-hmm. And that lasted a long time. Mm. I was like, I'm never going to sleep again. Like, it was a lot of, okay, well, I've now traded what I had for this, and this is just as bad.
God. That's enough to make you go insane.
Yes.
Toppled with insomnia, right. Which I think is, like, one of the worst things.
Yes. And then the guilt of, like, why am I feeling this way? I've always wanted to be a mom.
Yeah.
What is wrong with me? Why am I broken?
So that was my next question. Today or back then, did that affect your bond with your son? Like, did you flush when you touched him? I don't want to be around him. He did this.
Nope.
Never.
Nope. I didn't have that feeling at all.
Thank God.
No. I did. I mean, that was a big thank God. And I could sleep.
Yeah.
A lot of people can't sleep when they deal with, you know, whatever the stressors are or postpartum. I mean, now when I came off the drugs, I had insomnia.
Yeah.
But when I was just dealing with the postpartum, I could sleep.
Okay. Do you feel a specific way looking at your son now that you like conquered that and conquered it with him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we've been through more together than he knows.
Yes. Have you ever told him about this?
Mm-mm, no. Not yet. He's only 13. Yeah. So someday I will.
Yeah.
I mean, someday he's going to listen to this and he's going to know. But that boy is my heart walking around outside my body.
Oh, I asked you before we started this. I like to talk to people who only have one child by choice.
Right.
Because the postpartum, is that why he's your only child?
Michael always only wanted one.
Oh, and you're both only children.
Sort of.
To a degree.
He is 100% only child. I have a half brother that is 12 years younger than me.
Okay.
So I moved out to go to college when he started first grade.
Okay.
And we had different dads. I'm the only child from my mom and my dad.
Okay.
So Michael wanted one. I wanted two. And then with the postpartum, like,
yeah.
I know it doesn't necessarily happen again, but I was not willing to risk it.
Okay. Okay.
There's nothing you could do to make me go back through that.
Really?
Yeah. And it's been great. One and done, I cannot recommend it enough.
Really? And you get to travel mm-hmm. and you both have big careers. So, I mean, yeah. I think it suits you.
It does. It works. And he is fun and funny and he rolls with us. He's bougie when it comes to hotels. And like, we've definitely raised the bar on his expectations.
Yes. You have to be careful with that. I know.
Oh, he loves a spa day. I may not have a daughter, but he will go to the spa day with me.
Oh, that is so funny. I love it. Okay, so that wasn't the only challenge you have had. When we met, and this starts your surgery journey, so to speak. So at my morning out, it was Mother's Morning Out. You were the leader of the board.
Yeah.
And somehow you got my name from a list of, oh, she's a new mom, you know, hit her up to get on the board. So you were the president.
Yes.
When I joined. And I was an eager young mom, you know. So I think I asked you like 1,300 questions from that first meeting because I wasn't there or you weren't there because you were laid up.
Yes.
And this was what number surgery in a series of surgeries?
That surgery was, I believe, number 5 of 6 on my ankle.
On just your ankle. Mm-hmm. And so back in Florida, you what to your ankle?
I was a bridal dress wedding consultant.
Is this high school?
No, I was early college.
Oh my gosh.
And the phone rang and we had carpeted floors and I ran to get the phone and I had on shoes. Remember those big, thick, like Steve Madden?
Yeah,
thick
shoes? For it was sure. Those, yep.
With that rubber sole, and I took the corner and my ankle didn't. So I tore the tendons and ligaments. I didn't break it.
Wow.
I wish I had. I think a break would have been easier to heal.
Sure.
And then I had 2 surgeries that I ended up with more like nerve damage and more problems. And so then I found a different surgeon and we had 2 surgeries to repair what was done wrong the first time. And then I was good for years. But then we moved here and Michael and I were in a ground fighting like self-defense class. And
for funsies, you were taking
self-defense. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're grappling with each other. Grappling.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. I was on my back and he was on top of me and I was trying to do a hip toss, like to throw an attacker off.
Unreal.
And I had done it many times before, but that day we lost our balance and I was on the bottom. And so we both fell on me with my leg, with my knee bent and my ankle up under me. So it tore the tendons and ligaments that keep your tibia and fibula together. So like when I would, if I would walk up the stairs, the bones would split.
Shoot.
And we tried, I think it was like 5 or 6 months. They didn't want to do surgery. So I was in the boot forever and it wouldn't heal. And so they finally went in and did surgery and put in like these buttons and wires to wire the bones shut. And so that's what we were doing.
Okay.
That's why I missed the meeting with you.
Is that the last ankle surgery you've had?
No, there was one more because about 10 months after that surgery, all of the hardware started to come out of my bones. My bones apparently don't like foreign objects.
I would say so.
And so they started to retract and it was causing a lot of pain. So by that time, everything had healed. So the hardware was fine to come out. So I had to go back in and have it all taken out.
And you have felt okay in your ankles since then?
For the most part, yeah.
Okay.
Like I don't have the range that I have in my other ankle, but yeah, no problems.
Did your husband feel bad after that?
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, it was just a, you know, it was just a random accident.
Yes.
But yeah.
I mean, could always hold it against him to this day.
I could. He's been through so much with me, though.
Yes, yes. You'll give really a pass.
Okay,
so I said, and because of, you know, when you have this injury, this was 2 years in some kind of device, a boot, a walker, a scooter,
a cast,
a crutch, whatever.
Yes.
That there's got to be overcompensation or undercompensation in some way, because maybe not leading to, but this has maybe affected your back.
Yes.
Because you've also had multiple back surgeries.
Yes.
Okay.
We are still in that.
Still in that. Which, when your back hurts, it's enough to affect your mood, your mobility, your mental health.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me how your back problems started.
I honestly...
Because you mentioned it during pregnancy even. Yeah.
I don't exactly know what started it. I was in a couple car accidents when I was younger, but nothing... I mean, it was never any huge, you know, I never went to the hospital for a big injury, but... As I had gotten older, like once a year, I would turn too quickly or just turn the wrong way. And it was, I would be down for a day.
Jeez.
And it would happen like once a year. And then pregnancy, for sure. Yeah. The
sciatica.
The sciatica. It's always my low back. That's always been my issue with low back. And then photography, for sure. And then all the time that I was in the boot and whatnot. And I don't stop. So I didn't really like let, I didn't. I don't know that I took enough time to really heal, but I walked on uneven footing for 2 years
because,
you know, a boot and a cast don't match any shoes that you have ever. And so then most recently I was brushing my teeth and this was, it'll be 3 years in September, but I was brushing my teeth and I bent over to spit my toothpaste out and my back popped and I was on the floor.
Unbelievable.
And I had herniated the disc.
Once that happens and you hear this pop, like, you can't get up. Mm-mm.
I was on the couch for about 2 weeks. I mean, dealing with doctors and like trying to figure out what was wrong. I remember laying in the MRI machine just rolling because it hurt so bad to lay flat.
Oh, God.
And so that was when they figured out. They were like, okay, well, you've got 5 bulging discs in your thoracic spine and you've got a herniation at, you know, your L4, L5, and you've got a compressed nerve and blah, 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 blah.
Out of what you just described, what's the worst thing?
I honestly don't know. Not the thoracic. It's the low back. Okay. For sure. But I didn't realize that, like, the nerve pain that runs down my leg is one thing. Mm-hmm. And then I have a different issue also causing other back pain that has to do with severe arthritis that they found through all of this stuff. So the surgeries that I've had so far have been to alleviate the numbness in my leg and hip.
Okay. And you described this as a icy hot. Mm-hmm.
Like, but it burns so much. Hot,
it feels cold.
It feels cold.
Okay.
Yeah.
Down your leg from hip to foot?
Hip to foot. And sometimes, like, my 2 outer toes on my left foot will go numb. Mm. Like tingly, like you could stick a fork in them and I probably wouldn't feel it. And then up at my hip, it like wraps around my hip and runs like down my glute, down the outside of my leg, and then down my calf and into my foot.
What is a herniated disc?
From what I understand, the disc, like, you know, you think of your vertebrae and then there's the disc in between. It's where the disc slides out.
Okay. But it's a gel.
It is kind of it's not like tactile.
It's not an object.
It's an object. Yes. With firm sides. It is more fluid than that.
Whoa.
Which I always thought, you know, you see pictures of discs and it's like a little pad.
Yeah.
It looks like a pad.
Uh-huh.
It's not really a pad. And so when they've gone in and taken the herniation out, it leaves an empty hole.
Yeah.
Sort of where the herniation was.
Like bone on bone now.
It's more just a hole because they haven't taken the whole disc. They only take the herniated part. So there's still a disc left.
Okay.
So that was what we did with my first surgery. First surgery, I woke up and I was in way more pain. I mean, everybody said I should wake up and be like a new person. I couldn't get off the couch by myself for 5 days. Like, I needed Michael to literally lift me off the couch.
So your expectations of feeling great are crushed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, maybe tomorrow. So I slept on the couch for 2 weeks and because I had support there. I could lay with like the back of the couch up against, whereas if I was in the bed, if I would have had to completely maneuver my weight by myself, if I had to turn over. And so we waited a few months and then I was in November. My first one was right after Thanksgiving, I think. And then in March I went back and they did another MRI and I had another herniation.
Shoot.
And so they talked about doing a spinal fusion. And I was like, but people kept saying, you're too young, you're too young, mm-hmm. you're too young. And I'm like, I don't understand. Why are you too young? Then I found out, I went and had a second opinion at Barnes. And Barnes, the doctor I first met with, said, you know, I think you might be a good candidate for this other neurosurgeon that we have that does endoscopic discectomy.
Okay.
So they said, we're going to have you come back and meet with that guy. So, you know, Barnes is 3 hours away. So all these trips are, you know, it's a full day to go see these people. So I met with him, the second one, and he's like, yes, you are a great candidate for this. He said, we have like 95% success rate. It's a very small hole. I'm like, all right, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we did it. And my leg pain, it was rough. I will say coming out was rough. I won't take pain meds.
Yeah.
I don't want them. I never had an addiction issue. I just don't want them. And
with as many surgeries you've had, that would be problematic with as many pain meds as you would need, I would think.
Yeah. So my determination.
So you just kind of suffer.
Yes. Yes. I mean, my pain tolerance is pretty high because I've been living in pain for so long.
At this point, sure.
And I was like, nope, I'm not going to do it. And I also don't want to mess with my cocktail of what keeps me balanced. God. because it's hard to get that right. And it's been right for years. And I'm like, I don't want to add anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to take anything away. I don't want to mess with anything. So I refused all drugs. I mean, except for like right while,
sure.
You know, post-op. And it got to the point where, I mean, I was like that hideous, drooling, crying, like throwing up. I was in so much pain. And I was like, okay, this has to be worse for my healing than if I just said, forget it and take some medicine. So I did end up for a couple of days. I was like, I got to get through this. And so after that, though, once things started to kind of pick back up, I started physical therapy and my leg numbness was pretty much gone.
Oh, I bet you were so happy.
I was, but I misunderstood before the surgery that I thought it was also going to be taking the back pain away, that it was going to attack both things, and it was not.
Oh, God.
So I was still dealing with the back pain and I'm in therapy forever. And after 9 months, like I wasn't getting any better. And they were like, okay, we have to cut you loose because insurance won't pay anymore. Like you're getting stronger, but you aren't, it's not relieving any of your pain. And in this time, the hip pain started and then it was my hip and down my glute. And then it was down my glute, down to my mid thigh. So it's coming back. Mm-mm. The numbness, the burning, the, all of it. So now they're like, okay, we're going to go to pain management. We're going to try more steroid injections. We're going to try epidural.
Oh, yeah.
I got 12 hours of, about 12 hours of relief with the epidural. And so my pain management doctor's like, okay, that's good. We've actually hit the spot. She said, but, and I had another MRI because of all the pain coming back. They said, okay, you have another herniation. So we're at three now. So we're trying not to do surgery, which is why we were doing the injections. And she, after the epidural, said, you need to go back to your surgeon. Mm-mm. So that's where we are now. And I don't want another surgery, but she also said, if he doesn't want to do surgery, doesn't think it will work, whatever, her recommendation of something that I need to start looking at is potentially a spinal cord stimulator, which I don't want to do.
And what's that?
It looks like a pacemaker, okay. Sort of, and they mount it in your hip. And then they run leads from it up to the nerves in your spine.
External or internal?
Internal.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. And then basically it's like you control it through Bluetooth. Wow. Like you shut off the pain before it reaches your brain.
Wow.
But that opens up a whole new set of issues. Like what if the battery dies? Yeah. What if it doesn't work? Like,
and with your history, it would fail.
Well, and not only that, my body has proven it does not like foreign objects.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what if my body rejects it?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of stuck right now.
Like, the recovery for these is immense. The expectations you go in are like so high. Mm-hmm. Like, please heal me, heal mm-hmm. me. And then they let you down.
Yeah. It's frustrating.
And so frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, at this point, my expectation is that I will never be healed.
100.
I just, if I could get to a 4 on the pain scale for daily life instead of a 7.
Yeah. Right,
that would be a win.
Okay. And we didn't mention this, but your job, your profession today, your passion today is photography, which is a mobile on your knees over here, mm-hmm. over there. I mean, you
up,
have to.
Down.
Yes. Up, down. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's retract. And
yep.
How do you, your CPA, you have these terrible postpartum, you quit your job, a fish. And then how do you get into photography? Are you in Florida still?
Nope, we're here.
Okay, now what brought you here?
Once Michael finished
okay.
his PhD program and went on the job market,
uh-huh.
He interviewed at 10 different colleges around the country. He got jobs offers from all of them. He was very sought after. And we have no idea to this day why, but we were both called here. Okay. We both felt like this was the place. Neither of us had ever been here.
So funny.
This was the only job interview that I actually came on with him. Like I flew
to U of I.
To U of I.
Okay.
Nicholas was 4 months old at that interview.
Oh shoot. So you're still
Hot mess.
Oh,
I was a hot mess. Oh, first time away from the baby. I'm breastfeeding in the hotel. Like, yeah. And we left Nicholas with my in-laws. So it was my first time away from
okay.
him. Yeah. All the things. And we both it solidified that this was where we wanted to be.
What time of year was it? seasonally.
This is going to shock you. February.
Oh, yeah.
It was awful.
I can't believe that. And you moved here.
It was, and we flew into Savoy, you know, and that was before there was anything between Savoy and Champaign. And we got off the plane, and I think we had a rental car. And I did. I literally cried. I'm like, I had all these hopes, and everything was like gray. It was after the snow you guys had here, and it was so gross.
The worst.
And I was like, maybe this isn't the spot for us. Mm-hmm. And then the guy that lived here that Michael was friends with that was kind of in charge of our visit, he took us to Black Dog. Oh, that's... Old Black Dog. The Urbana Black Dog.
Yes.
And I don't know. It, I mean, it was like, I don't know. Something just changed. And it was like, okay, I can do this.
Wow.
For some reason, I don't know why Black Dog and the unit and the campus, like he took us to the quad and, you know, we saw that. I was like, it's going to be okay.
That is so funny that that's what turned you.
Isn't that bizarre? I mean,
it is good barbecue.
It is good barbecue. And I come from the South. It, like, I have high expectations.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. It was just kind of the feel of the town and the university. It was like, this, we can do this. This could be okay. And so while we were here, we bought gear and bought Nicholas a onesie. And when we got home, we took all the, you know, everybody got their stuff on and we took a picture, and that's how we announced
Your move.
He was going.
Oh my gosh.
So that we got here, it'll be 13 years next month.
Okay. So as old as your son is. As old.
He was 8 months old when we moved here and started crawling the day we moved in.
Wow.
I was like, you couldn't wait 1 week.
For real? Settled.
Like trying to unpack boxes with a new crawler? No thanks.
And then photography.
Oh, so then photography. Okay. So now, mind you, I'm in horrible postpartum through all of this. We moved 1,200 miles away from all of our family. At that time, the accounting department had hired 5 people the year that we started.
Okay.
All of us moved within a block of each other.
No way. With intention or by coincidence?
Random.
Wow.
And there were already several professors that lived within a block either direction as well. So
what neighborhood is this?
Ironwood.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And so we all became instant family.
Aww.
Because everyone had small children.
Yeah.
Everyone was far from home. There were twins from Canada.
Oh.
And so we were each other's support system.
That's nice.
It was great. At one point, we had 27 kids that lived on our street.
Wow. Wow.
That went to school together. We did, you know, like Easter egg hunts and Halloween. Sure. Like, it was awesome.
Yeah.
But that was my support system.
Mm.
And so I, you know, in all this, I'm like, all right, I'm home with Nicholas. And then he started going to MMO.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
And I was like, I am an extrovert. I love to be with people. I needed to get out of the house.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I have got to have some non-baby interaction and try to get myself back together. But I didn't want to go back to accounting.
Yes.
And I felt good at nothing. I told Michael, I think I told you this at 5 things maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I looked at him one day because he would bring it up periodically. Like, what do you think you want to do? I'm like, I don't know.
I said,
I'm good at nothing. I said, I think I just want to go work at Buckle at the mall. And he goes,
that is so random.
You have a CPA. I'm not even going to dignify that with an answer.
Did you like shopping at the Buckle?
I mean, randomly, but it was not like I was a big frequenter. I don't know why that came out of my mouth to this
day. So funny.
Not that there's anything wrong with the Buckle. I'm not saying that.
You're more of a Limited girl.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah. So I don't know why that came out of my mouth, but the fact of it was I felt talentless. I felt like I had no skill.
Sure.
I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I needed to do something. And much like so many moms, I had bought a DSLR when Nicholas was born, but I had never done anything with it. And I signed up for a community, like at the Springer Center, whatever, DSLR class over the summer. It was a 6-week class. And about 3 weeks in, I came home and I sat Michael down at the kitchen table and I said,
your risk averse.
Yeah. My risk, husband. My very risk averse husband. I said, I know what I want to do. I'm going to start a photography studio. And he's like, you're going to what?
Oh my God.
I said, yeah. I said, that's what I'm going to do. And he's like, okay. So then the business me, I wrote out a business plan. I mean, it wasn't super formal, but
sure.
there was a business plan. And I said, I knew right away, though, I wanted to be high-end.
Yes.
That I wanted to provide
something
high-end experience.
Yeah.
And So I said, I cannot sell a Range Rover with a Yaris on the floor. I said, I need to take a line of credit to get some things. Because, I mean, keep in mind, I had only ever used windows. I mean, I had never shot with anything but a kit lens. I had never shot off of auto. I had never seen Photoshop or Lightroom. I buy all this stuff and I'm like, I'm going to figure it out.
Oh my gosh.
And off we went.
Wow.
So he.
And Pixels by Emily was born.
Yep. September of 2014.
Where was your first office space? Your first space?
Well, first I worked out of coffee shops. Like I would do photography in people's homes.
Okay. So no studio.
There was no studio at first.
Oh my gosh.
I added newborns in February of 15.
Uh huh.
And I did that in people's homes and oh my God, that, oh, so hard. So much. Oh my God. So when I finally did get a studio, it shaved 4 hours off of every session because I didn't have to pick props, load the car, reload the car, re-unload the car, like all of it. So my first studio was in, the thing, it used to be a Volkswagen dealership. It's on Mattis right by Schnucks. It had Rasmussen Pool Supply in it.
Yes.
That place.
So a little shopping center.
Yeah, it was a shopping center.
Okay.
I had 700 square feet.
Okay.
And we were there for like a year and a half. It was the studio where we were going to decide if Pixels was going to live or die.
Wow.
Like, are we going to fly?
Are you growing? Like, is your business picking up?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Things are growing and we outgrew it. Which was why we needed to move.
I would liken your newborn pictures to like Ann Geddes. Remember her?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was early on, like, yes, kind of the forefrontier of newborn photography.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Putting them in interesting poses, wrapping them tightly in swaddle cloth, like artistic.
Yeah, for
newborn
sure.
Newborn photos.
Yeah.
Okay.
And very intentionally placed.
Yes.
Like,
okay.
You know, we like them asleep and we don't want them to have that furrowed brow. And I need to be able to see at least three fingers when their hand is under their chin. Like there's lots of little nuanced things that we focus on. So we moved to the basement of the Robeson building.
Uh-huh.
And it was double the space. It was 1400 square feet and we completely built it out. It had been in a law firm or a law office and it was awful and ugly. And so we did a complete build on it. And that's where we were for 5 years.
Jeez.
And it was great, but a pain. Like that building, the elevators never worked.
Sure.
And we were downstairs and parking's hard. And
downtown is just
difficult.
Yeah. Yeah.
Difficult.
Yeah.
But it's a good location to be downtown.
Yeah.
And so in about 4.5 year mark, we had outgrown that space. And so we took over another 1400 square feet on the second floor of the same building.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep. And so we had all of our lighting rails installed. We did a build out, but not quite as extensive as the initial one. We did not have a contract, like where there was no signed lease because it had been the home of one business and then it had been vacant all through COVID.
Sure.
And so the landlord finally, after like 2 years of it being vacant, was like, okay, I'm going to start leasing out the offices. But my goal is to rent this to one single business. So if that ever happens, you guys are going to have no time to get out. Well, I'm like, I only need this for like a year and a half. Cause I started thinking, okay, I want to find a permanent home, but I wasn't in a position to buy or build or do anything right at that time. So I'm like, if I can get 18 months out of this, I'm good.
Sure.
So that was February. In June, we got the call. You have 60 days to get out.
Oh no.
So we had been in St. John.
Yes.
And I got the call the day before we left.
Oh no.
So I'm trying to deal with it while we're gone. I get home, we move everything out. And I had never had any problems in the basement, but then it flooded for the first time ever. We had a horrible rainstorm, and I don't even know how that building, I don't know how my space flooded. I really don't, because it's an interior place, but it did. It ruined the floors. There was mold coming up the walls. I was like, I'm out. I'm done.
Right when you got back from vacation.
I'm done. Yeah. So we started looking for space. And
now how much time do you have left?
Well, no, I could keep the basement.
I just
couldn't keep the second floor.
Got it.
Okay. So I was off the second floor. Everything's crammed into multiple places. All of our Santa stuff was being stored at a warehouse offsite.
Yes.
So it was kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm tired of this. Tired of all of this. So we started looking for a space with like 3,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Because that's about what I needed. Mm. Well, the rent was insane. And the rent for the spaces wasn't even in places I wanted to be. And it didn't suit my brand. And I was very close to just closing the doors. Because I was like, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah, yeah.
Not. And so this building, it was like it was meant to be. I don't know. And it was a client that had told me 2 years before. He lived in Mahomet, him and his wife. And they were like, you need to be in this building in Mahomet. Mm-hmm. There's like this old electrical shop. They're like, it's vacant. Like they still own it, but they don't do anything in it. And I'll never, Jared Ernst is who said it to me. He's like, that's where you need to be. I'm like, dude, I can't afford that.
Sure.
I can't do that. Well, that building was up for sale again. And so we start down the path of small business loan. What can we do? I mean, I had nothing to put down. I'm like, I can, there's no way this is going to work.
Sure.
So we jumped through a lot of hurdles, a lot of hoops. We got the, you know, that horrible phone call a week before closing. That's like, oh, now you need to bring 10% in cash. Like, I don't have 10% in cash. So my risk averse husband and I back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
And do we do this? Is this smart? Is this stupid? And finally we just jumped off the cliff.
Jeez.
And we went all in. And so like we put the house up as our, you know, as a backer. God. So on my head, on my shoulders, I'm like, if I fail, like everything's on the line.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, am I good enough to do this?
Yeah.
Like my passion's there, but are people going to see it? Are they going to get it?
Yeah.
And, so we jumped.
And
I almost threw up signing the papers. Like, I mean, all the way till we were on the other side, but we closed in November of 2022 on like a Thursday at 6 o'clock, and at 6 a.m. the next morning, Jared actually had the dumpster delivered as we were signing the papers. And, oh, because I said Jared Ernst, the client, was the one who told me about it. He's also in construction.
Oh.
So once the building started getting like real, like this was going to happen, I said, well, this is your fault. So you're going to have to be the one that does the build out.
Yes, yes.
He's like, I'm in. And he did it all. He was amazing. Like I said, he had the dumpster delivered the day we signed the papers, and they started demo at 6 a.m. the next morning.
Wow. And now it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
It's branded to your T.
It is.
Yes.
It really
it's got your colors, your logo, and Muhammad, I think, suits you.
Yeah. And we seem to be getting a very good welcome.
Oh, good, 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 good.
At first, it was kind of questionable. I didn't realize quite what the good old boys club
is.
But there's a lot of new businesses. There's a lot of female-owned businesses coming in, and those walls are coming down.
Oh, that's
great. Because we're knocking them down.
So you're glad you did it.
Yes.
Now.
Oh, it's home.
Yeah.
Like we walk in and it's like being at home, and it's 3 minutes from my home, because we also moved our house in the middle of all this.
Oh,
we moved from Champaign to.
Oh, you did.
Yeah.
Did that decision come in tandem or one before the other?
We actually bought our house a year before we moved in.
Okay.
It was another thing that was very like meant to be.
Okay.
When we were looking for the space for the studio, we knew we wanted to move, and we couldn't find any houses we liked. We wanted more space than we had, like yard wise, but we didn't want like a farm. And so our banker was like, just go find a lot. He's like, go find something. He goes, I don't care what it is. Just go find it. So we got a tip off that there was going to be this cul-de-sac developing off a street that already exists. And there were only going to be six homes, and it was never going to be a through street. And we were like, oh my God, if we buy these two lots that are adjacent to each other, like this gives us the space we want. So we'd been looking for builders online, and Michael found the house. He's like, look at this house. And we looked online, and I was like, oh my God, it's gorgeous. It's called The Halo. So we meet with Premier Builders, and so that we were talking to them. And then our banker said, you know, I have a really good friend that I work with that also lives in Mahomet and just bought a piece of property. They're going to be building at some point. Like, you should check her house out.
Huh.
So he puts us in contact, and we, you know, she agrees to meet us and show us the house. We walk up. It's the house on the website. We didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is next door to the two lots we were going to buy,
oh,
like literally right next door. So we're walking through the house and I am, you know, all the stars in my eyes. I'm like, this is the most unbelievable house I've ever seen. This woman is the nicest lady I've ever met. Her name's Amy Randolph and she has become one of my very best friends.
Oh, that's nice.
So we looked at her and we were like, can we buy your house? It was not for sale, mind you.
Nuh-uh.
We were like, can we buy your house? And she was like, well, can we take a day or two to think about that? And we were like, sure. And she came back and she said yes. So she talked to Premier, who had built the house, because she needed them to build her house, her new house. So she was like, let me see if they can start our build and this and that. So we bought the house. That was in, I think, July we saw it. We closed on it in October. Because they wanted us to buy it so that they knew we weren't going to walk away.
Sure.
And we wanted to buy it so we knew that it wasn't going to get sold out from underneath us. So that's what we did. We bought the house. They lived in it for a year until their build was done. And then they moved out and we moved in.
Okay. So you moved in what month, and what month does your storefront open?
We moved in September.
Uh-huh.
Like September 3rd.
Okay.
We closed on the business in November.
Okay.
And then we moved in February.
Oh, God. Okay, that's a lot.
A lot going on.
A lot.
All with a bad back, mind you.
Yes, that's been in the back of my mind this whole time you're talking, that you're like in this like level of pain, yeah. Consistent pain. Okay, so I want to talk about, you mentioned it, the St. John decision.
Yeah.
And we've already been going over an hour, but there's a couple more things I want to get to. That's okay. Sorry. That's right. The St. John, you are a busy lady. Your husband has a high, big job. Your son is in school at NextGen, and you fall in love with this place, St. John, and you make the decision to spend less than a quarter of the year there.
Yeah.
So tell me how you fall in love with St. John, the island.
Michael and I always used to love to cruise when we were single, when we were married and pre-kid, and obviously definitely before COVID. And we often cruise in the Caribbean. So we had gone to St. Thomas, and back when we worked for the same accounting firm, the guy, the owner, loved St. Thomas. And so he was like, okay, if you guys go over there, you need to go to St. John. He's like, it's just a ferry right away. And so he's actually the one that sent us there the first time. And Michael fell in love with it immediately. I liked it. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
But it was like a siren calling to his soul after that day. And so, you know, several years went by and we might have gone back, you know, another time. I think we did a couple cruises where we would, as soon as we got off the cruise ship, we would go get to the ferry dock and go over and spend the day and come back.
But a little less touristy, a little less commercial, a little more remote.
Yeah.
You said no one is soliciting, buy this pot, get your hair braided.
No, none of that.
Okay.
None of that. Great restaurants. It just has a really cool vibe.
Wow.
Beautiful, beautiful beaches. It's just like a neighborhood. It's like a quiet neighborhood.
I love it.
So it just grew over time. Like, we went with a girlfriend and her husband. They actually are the ones that found the house that we now stay in every time we go.
Every time you go.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a cabbie, you know his name. He picks you up. He takes you the ferry.
Mezzer is the best.
And you spend how much time a year there?
We spend somewhere between 5 and 8 weeks a year.
Okay. Do you think there's plans in your future you'd stay more?
I think after Nicholas graduates, if we can figure out how to leverage it. I mean, Michael has a big job. He can do a lot remotely, but he can't do it all remotely.
Sure.
So it just, it'll depend on that. But I mean, for sure, in the long run at some point,
Okay.
We would never move there.
Yeah.
Because life on a rock is hard.
Yeah.
It is not the easiest, and it is not cheap, because everything at St. John is really brought over twice.
Sure.
Because things get from the mainland to St. Thomas, wow, and then St. Thomas to St. John. So
when you say life on a rock is hard, meaning there's the accessibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like the power situation there.
Oh, so interesting.
WAPA, that's the power provider, or the non-power provider. Like, there's a huge joke on St. John. Everybody hates WAPA.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, the internet can go down.
Yes.
And, you know, it's also
a little off the grid.
It's a little off the grid. And wow, it's in the middle of a hurricane season path. So,
right.
You know, there aren't movie theaters. There aren't.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
There are three grocery stores.
Yes.
And if they didn't get an order of whatever it is, guess what?
You're not getting it either. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So back to the photography. Your limited mobility, you have decided to take on more help at your business so you can focus more on two things, really. You mentioned like imagination art, mm-hmm. which I thought was really neat. And your big focus, I think, for the year is the Santa experience. You just want that to grow and take up this majority. Is that okay?
Yeah, I would. My ultimate goal is for the Magical Santa experience to pay the bills, to do everything for the business, and that the rest of the year we can do super creative pieces for people, truly like be commissioned to do amazingly cool art.
We have participated in the Magical Santa experience, and you build what looks like $1 million set. It's vintage. It looks like an old Coca-Cola ad or a Norman Rockwell painting, but it's a photo that is edited in such a way that it looks like an oil painting. Mm-hmm. It is amazing. And it's an interactive 45-minute experience with Santa where you share a cookie. He reads you a story. You open a gift. I mean, it's an experience. It's not the mall.
Right.
Where you're waiting in line.
And it's one family at a time.
One family at a time. Personalized. Like they know our dog's name.
Yes.
It's absolutely magical. And so talk to me about if someone wants that, what they do now, where we are now.
Where we are now is we are fully involved in the planning of it. We are, you know, schedules are being finalized. We've built the sets for this year, which are going to be all new from any set we've ever done.
Oh, wow.
We've already photographed Santa with the sets.
Meaning old families can come back now for a new.
Yep.
Wow.
And all of our old families are always welcome to come back. Once you've done the full experience, they can come back for revisits and you get 20 minutes with Santa and it's just your kid and Santa. There's no line. Everybody's scheduled. So it's not as involved as the full experience, but it's still your kid is with their Santa.
Yes. Okay.
And we still do additional things to make it really special that you would not have, you know, in a regular just stop in. But so for now, we have our wait list online. Anybody that signs up on the wait list gets notified ahead of time mm-hmm. and has advance notice to book before we go live with registration.
Okay.
We're going to be opening registration this year in early August.
Okay.
And then the sessions are going to be held through October and November. I think we have 4 or 5 weekends slated for this year.
Okay. And tell me the website.
The website is pixelsbyemily.com.
Okay. A lot of people like forget their website when I ask. Like, it's like they go like,
I was like, wait, what is it? Yeah. I almost said the old www.
Okay. And then you're trying to focus or refocus on imagination art. Mm-hmm. So what is that?
It may be easier to explain or give you an example. Like I had an idea just the other day for an existing client that came and did the Santa experience. And now they are, I just did the mom and dad's headshots. They're part of my Master Networks family. Both of them they own their own businesses. And so anyway, she is a beekeeper and owns the hive.
The honey. Okay.
So she is like tripling her store and they're about to open in the new spot on Patton Drive on 150.
Okay.
And her girls are 9 and 7. They are adorable. And I got this idea to do a very customized piece with bees, honey, like honey dipper. The girls, I found out once I told her my idea, they have bee suits, like beekeeper suits that are their size with like the mesh for the thing. And so we're going to bring in like her hives and it's going to be a very refined fine art piece that shows her girls at this age, which is while they opened their dream place.
Yeah.
Jessica is like over the moon, like jumping up and down. We're so excited to do it. I've got backdrops in on the way. She's bringing all of her equipment in. So, and then I will composite in bees. One of the daughters has this super strong eye cross when she wants to. And actually, that's the picture.
I can see what you're doing.
Yes.
I can see
so
it.
There's going to be a bee on the end of her nose with her eyes crossed. And then, I mean, I have so many ideas for this. I can't wait. So I'm going to try to compete with this. Maybe not. I don't know if this will be the World Photographic Cup piece, but I compete every year. So this is an idea for competition. And I'll show you like the inspiration piece picture, and you can kind of get a feel for how refined it'll be on the when it's finished.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I mean, your photography is different. It is art.
Agreed.
Yes, it is art. Anything else do you think that I have not touched on?
No, I don't think so. I think we've talked about...
You think we've covered it all?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Emily, you are a special lady, and I just wish you all the success. Pixels by Emily. And then what about on Insta? Where can we find you?
We are Pixels by Emily on everything.
Okay.
Facebook, that's easy enough. Insta. We haven't ventured into the world of TikTok yet. Jen is holding me at bay with that one.
Yeah.
So we'll see if we head into that. We're also making a push into luxury branding because babies are so tough for me right now.
Yes.
We are rolling out a new headshot happy hour program for businesses. So that's coming. And you can find us at Pixels by Emily pretty much anywhere.
Okay. And I highly suggest the Sieta experience. It is like, it was a special hour for my two boys. So hit her up for that. Thank you so awesome. Much for your time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. However your podcast host of choice allows, please positively rate, review, comment, and give all the stars. Don't forget to follow, subscribe, share, and ring that notification bell so you know when the next episode drops. Also, search and follow Hyperlocal CU on all social media. If I forgot anything or you need me, visit my website at hyperlocalcu.com. Bye!